It's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does on a Wednesday. Glad to have you with us. Busy 60 minutes ahead. David Ardsma hangs out with us, former MLB reliever, our closer. He's going to be joining us middle innings today. Talk some baseball with him. Oh my God. Can we just start the show? Sam Yarnell, I can't wait to hear what David Ardsma has to say about this. I said it weeks ago that the Yankees needed a change at closer. I will say it again. You cannot win a World Series with the worst closer in baseball. He has blown more saves than anybody in baseball. I'm talking about Clay Holmes. Luis Gil, let's make him a closer. Maybe it's Clark Schmidt. Maybe it winds up being Clark Schmidt because the Yankees are going to have too many starters with all these guys coming back. I don't know what they're doing. But somebody has to close games that is not named Clay Holmes because this is becoming a real problem. Forget that it might cost you the division. The Yankees are going to be a playoff team. Playoff games are close. You're not going to win 7-2, you know, five times in the playoffs, six times in the playoffs. You have to be able to win close games. And the Yankees are blowing too many of these close games. Wyatt Langford last night, the talented rookie for the Rangers, walk-off grand slam off Clay Holmes, as you see on your screen. I can't take it anymore, Sam. I can't take it anymore.
So we thought the Orioles had a bad bullpen when Craig Kimbrell was blowing all these saves, and that might cost them some run at the postseason. Craig Kimbrell's blown six saves all season. Clay Holmes has blown 11. You're exactly right. He leads the major leagues in that category. And quite frankly, until you look at like that stat, it really didn't seem like he was that bad. You knew he was bad, but like Jason's exactly right. He, by the numbers, is like the worst active closer who has maintained their role throughout the entirety of the season in baseball today. And quite frankly, it's not really close. He's almost twice as bad as the guy in second place. Very, very interesting development here in New York because, you know, after all the things that we've seen go wrong with the Yankees in the past, like, I don't know, I'll even say 6 years after the Astros cheating loss, the cheating Astros loss, I should say. But in the 6 years since then, I think the bullpen not being nails was never really the pitfall, seemingly, of this team. And it finally has come to the forefront. I mean, aside from the fact that the starting rotation is just not what the Yankees needed it to be, because at the end of the day, that bullpen might be serviceable if you're getting the Cy Young caliber Garrett Cole. But clearly there's been a drop off there. And clearly, you know, we've talked about it on this show. Luis Gil falling off a cliff has helped nobody. So yeah, at the end of the day, it's pitching across the board for the Yankees, Jason. They got to do something differently, like organizationally. And you don't know if that's, you know, taking a shot on one of these guys that you have high in the minor leagues, like a Cam Schlittler or something else who dealt in college baseball as recently as two seasons ago. I'm not sure. Maybe moving Luis Gil to that closer role. You and I talked about it on this show. My hesitation with that is still the same as it was before. What is a death sentence to a closer? It is free passes, and Luis Gil cannot throw the ball over the plate reliably when you need him to the most. So the Yankees are in a little bit of a sticky wicket. At the end of the day, though, Jason, that offense will still carry him to at least the ALCS.
I don't know. I just don't know, especially if they don't win a wild. If they wind up a wild card team, now your margin for error is smaller. You got shorter series, and all of a sudden, you know, you just don't know. This is a problem of the Yankees making. That organization has known, I think, long enough that Clay Holmes was not World Series winning closer material. The organization has known this for a while. They've done nothing to address it. I lay this at the feet of Brian Cashman, and now you're just got to try and figure out a way to piece it together, get enough outs in the postseason. To Paul Skeens, Doug Eddings, calm the down. Like, seriously. What is Doug Eddings? Whoever came to a baseball game to watch Doug Eddings behind the plate? Nobody. And you've got Doug Eddings losing his ever-loving mind last night with the Cubs and Pirates playing against each other. You've got Eddings basically back there. Skeens throws a ball that he thinks is a strike, and he starts to hop off the mound, and Eddings loses his mind. Like, what is going on here, Sam?
Yeah, so the story behind it, as I've been told, was apparently the Pirates, it was more because of what the Pirates dugout was doing than what Paul Skeens did. As I understand it, it seems like the Pirates dugout may have been very discontent with that ball call, considering it had been called a strike the other way all night long to that point, or I guess in the top half of that inning to that point. But all of that said, you know, you and I talk about officiating so often on this program because, you know, in the last 5 years, I continue to say this, it's taken a forefront that we've never seen before in sports. It's given these umpires, especially in a day and age where we've got ESPN producing hour-long documentaries about one singular call an umpire made, it's given these umpires a false sense of importance. Their importance is always the quietest one, right? Yeah, and everyone knows that baseball doesn't happen without umpires, but at the end of the day, you shouldn't know umpires are there because their job should be just to make the calls that are very easily made on the field. Doug Eddings making this moment about himself, just not good. I'm sure that the MLBUA is not happy with him. And as much as they will stand up and defend him publicly, I would not be surprised if behind closed doors, umpires around the league and the heads of that union aren't saying, listen, man, you can't do this anymore, especially not for the best pitcher in the game right now.
Yeah, and look, it was a bad look for Doug Eddings, who clearly thought he was being shown up on some level by Paul Skeens. And yes, there was the issues prior to that where you had the Pirates upset with the strike zone and the game not necessarily being called the same on both sides. But man, oh man, Doug Eddings, you cannot put yourself in that situation the way he did last night. What does David Arnsmith think of it all? We'll find out what he thinks about a whole bunch of MLB topics. He'll join us for a couple of segments coming up on the show. Later on, some NFL. Trent Williams signs with the Niners. What does that mean for them going forward? Interesting admission from Brandon Ayuk as well. Lots more sports wrap on a Wednesday. Don't you go anywhere. Sports Wrap continues on this Wednesday. Sam will rejoin the conversation coming up in about 10 minutes. We're going to talk some baseball. David Arnsmith is here. Former MLB reliever. Our closer, he's joining us. Our closer is joining us in the, I guess it's a little different today. He's joining us in the middle innings.
Jumping in there. I'm just trying to get to the closer. That's really my role. You guys started it. I'll be that middle guy.
We did start it. Boy, did we start it today on baseball. Because I could barely sleep last night after watching that performance by Clay Holmes, who blew his 11th save of the season, David Arnsmith. Oh. There is no way the New York Yankees, greatest organization in the history of baseball, there's no way they could go into the postseason. They are. They're the greatest organization. This is not. This is factual.
Can't argue it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I want to. Can't argue it.
There's no way they could possibly go into the playoffs with Clay Holmes as their closer right now, can they?
Who else are you going to pick? That's the problem with all of this is Clay Holmes. That's it. I mean, we're September 4th. And we're looking at this and they're going, okay, well, what do we do? Who do we put in closer? You don't have an eighth inning guy that's got a career, you know, 200 saves under his career belt or a young guy that's got, you know, there's a next closer incoming and he's right there. You don't have options and you've waited too long to figure out something. You know, it was interesting. I was looking at the Dodgers. They don't have a bona fide just closer, but they got three guys over 10 saves on that roster right now in the bullpen, and they're going to be filling it up with a bunch of starters too. What do you do if you're them? It's Clay Holmes or bust at this point, because they should have already thrown stuff against the wall a month ago. They should have figured out. May 20th, he had a zero ERA. Ever since then, he's got over a five. And so it's not like it's been a problem that just started happening, and it's not like he just goes in little streaks where he has a couple bad games here and there. It's been a struggle. And one of the big things we're talking about is August 18th was the last time he blew a save. You're like, all right, like, good run. I'm like, that ain't it.
That's not it.
A good run.
No, that's not a good run.
Or games or something. It's not good.
But let me ask you. You shorten rotations in the postseason. Why can't you pull a Luis Gil and make him your closer?
There's nothing against it. I like that idea. I like the idea that he's got the stuff. He's going out there. He's a little wild. He's going to have energy. He's going to be young and just dumb enough to pull it off. The same time, do it right now. Get him in that bullpen right now. Don't wait. Don't put him as starter. Don't worry about trying to win the East with Luis Gil as your starter. You've got enough guys. Put him in the bullpen right now. Let's find out what he has. Put him in some tough situations. Shorten up the warm-up, right? There's a lot of things. There's a lot of problems that are going to come about that they got to figure out. And then see what you have. But that's the problem is if they don't do that, they're going to go in the postseason and maybe have to make that move with a guy with his first time under the lights in Yankee Stadium in the ninth inning or God forbid, going somewhere else and closing out a game in Houston. Like, good luck.
What is it physically that you see with Holmes when you see him struggle right now? Because this is a guy that was able to get people out in high leverage situations. What do you see? Is there something you see physically that he can't put hitters away right now?
I think that's what it is. Right now, his slider, the consistency, when I hear him talk, it seems like some things are just a little off, like mechanically, he's just not feeling his pitches the same way. And which happens, which sometimes you don't know why. And it doesn't matter what the analytics show you, they're going to show you that the spin rate's all different, but you're like, okay, cool. What do we do? And so a lot of times where this really happens, where this helps is where you can take a step back, throw in some non-leverage stuff, have a game or two where it doesn't matter how many runs you give up, and you kind of figure your stuff out. You take a breath, a couple days off. They don't have that luxury right now because they don't have anybody to put in that spot. Come on.
I know. Like I said, I'm at a loss. I mean, Clark Schmidt, you know, maybe you put Clark Schmidt in that spot.
Kainley would be the number one option for me. Because
you're not going down to the minor leagues. You're not going down to the minor leagues to grab somebody at this late stage of the season. Let me ask you something. When you look at the Yankees and the Orioles, and obviously, you know, both of those teams, you know, sort of battling for the top spot in the AL, which manager needs a deeper run to the postseason to potentially keep their job? Or do you think Aaron Boone is keeping his job regardless, and it's more just a question of whether the Orioles hang on to their guy or not?
It's Hines and Boone, right? For me, without a doubt, it's Boone. Boone, the Yankees, the way it's built, the way they look at everything is there's some point he has to deliver at some point. And delivering isn't making the playoffs anymore. Making the playoffs isn't that hard in Major League Baseball as it used to be. And he still hasn't had those huge, big run into the World Series. Joe Torre would not be keeping his job if he had this run as Aaron Boone has had right now. So Hines,
Do you think it would be smart for them? Is there another manager out there to you that makes sense for that organization if it's not Brandon Hyde?
Ooh, if you could somehow get Kevin Cash, yes. Mm. That'd be a great one, but I don't think that's even possible. I absolutely love Brandon Hyde. I love what he's done. There's no doubt in my mind. I think he is the man for that job. I think there are some issues with that team, with starting rotation, with that bullpen that they're battling through, and he still has the AL East title right now in his hands. So to me, he's an incredible manager. I don't even question him. I mean, you can get a Craig Counsell in there, but again, he ain't going anywhere. You know, there's nobody on that are sitting at home that would want a job that I would want over Brandon Hyde right now, unless it was Dusty Baker.
Buck Showalter?
No.
Not with kids?
No, he's already died. That his he has been passed. It was 10 years ago, maybe. At the same time, Buck Showalter has a way of coming in, and if you don't win, it's kind of crash and burned. This organization is built for the next 5 years. I'm not touching it with a guy that's a win now kind of manager.
Does anybody want to play the Astros in the postseason right now?
God, no. No. Why would you? Without rotation, getting healthy, getting guys getting better, the bullpen figured out every problem that they had. They got three-headed monster at the end of that thing. And that whole entire 1-9 is solid. And you got one of the best players in the world in Yordan Alvarez that gets no mention every year of like how great he is. I don't want to see that team. Why would you? And they know how to win. And they know how to come from behind. They know how to pull in on the road. I mean, yeah. They check every box.
Sammy Arnell is going to join the conversation coming up here in a few minutes. Let him weigh in. We got Paul Skeens to talk about. Doug Eddings blew up at him last night. We'll explain what all that's about if you missed it at the top of the show. David Artsma, former MLB reliever, hangs out with us on Sports Wrap. Don't go anywhere. Continue the baseball conversation on this Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap. We will go wall to wall on the NFL tomorrow, barring some type of breaking news. We will go wall to wall on the NFL tomorrow for the start of the season. We will have our picks for the season. What do you think, David Artsma? Sam and I do NFL picks throughout the season. All right? Every Friday we do Page versus the Prince. And I'm trying to come up with some type of humiliating bet where whoever wins at the end of the year, the other person has to do X, Y, Z. I'm trying to come up with something. Something where I could just... where I can make it so Sam doesn't even want to like stare his mother in the eye ever again. Like that sort of thing.
David, hear me out. This is my idea, and it would make it so that I would not want to look my mother in the face. I think that if I win and I have a better record at the end of football season, Jason should have to wear Nats gear for a whole show. And if Jason wins at the end of the season, I should have to wear Yankees gear at the end of the season and try not to gag on screen.
See, I don't care about wearing jerseys. I got a Bobby Witt Jr. All-Star jersey that I just bought at the MLB team store in New York at their flagship store.
But you got to make it like Nats gear for everything for a month. Like, you like shorts when you work out, t-shirts every single show. Like,
now that actually would hurt. That would hurt. Every day for a month.
Extend it a little bit.
Every day for a month would kind of hurt. What is Doug Eddings thinking? I mean, I don't know. Maybe was Doug Eddings an umpire when you were in the league?
I'm pretty sure he was.
I mean, what is he thinking yesterday with Paul Skeens? Like,
Didn't see this. What happened?
You didn't see this?
How I didn't see it.
Doug Eddings snapped. Oh, my God. Doug Eddings snapped on Paul Skeens.
It was the ball outside.
Yes. What is Doug Eddings thinking when he's snapping on Paul Skeens? It wasn't even like, I mean, Paul Skeens kind of took a step towards the dugout. It wasn't like he made some huge gesture or anything like that. He was laughing about it. And Doug Eddings is losing his mind. I know some of it had to probably do with calls earlier in the game and he's barking at the Pirates dugout. Yeah. But come on. I mean, it's just another one of these examples of umpires not realizing their place in the game.
Just be there. Just be there. Again, it's not like he took five steps and then like threw his head and threw his hands in the air or something. He took one kind of trot. He thought it was a strike. It was definitely outside. But let him be a kid. Let him mess up and say, hey, like, it's like, hey, tell you, this is how you handle it. You go to your catcher and you whisper in his ear, hey, let him know not to show me up. I don't think he meant to.
Yes.
You whisper, hey, I don't think he meant to, but let him know maybe even if he took that step, don't smile. You know, like, don't give me the little, like, kind of maybe a little cocky smirk on it, like, oh, you missed one. Just be. Because at the end of the day, if that was the AAA and all the videos of before the season was when he would, like, throw a ball in the outside corner and he'd go up to the machine and they'd call it a strike and the umpire was wrong, he would have been wrong on that. That was a ball.
Yeah.
Just handle it like a professional.
Doug Eddings, just by the way, for all of those of you out there wondering, was an umpire throughout the duration of David's career. However, I was not able to find whether or not David ever pitched with Doug Eddings behind the plate, unfortunately. He is known, though, in Major League Baseball, and I'm sure David can attest to this and may like our friend Doug Eddings because of this. He's known for having the largest strike zone in Major League Baseball.
And I'm okay with this.
Consistently. Obviously, you'll get the wild calls from your CB Buckners and the formerly umpired Angel Hernandez, but Doug Eddings has the consistently largest strike zone in baseball. Okay. So you understood it at the end of the day, Jason, you and I talked about it earlier. Just, he's got to know exactly what David said. You got to not make anything about yourself as an umpire.
Yeah, I get Absolutely. It. Is Francisco Lindor a legit MVP candidate? Given what we know about Otani, I mean, Otani's going to go 50-50. I mean, I hear people talking about Lindor for MVP. Are we really having this conversation?
I think that he's a legit MVP candidate. I think there is a difference between being an MVP candidate and being an MVP. There's a list of four right now. It's Otani, MVP. And then you have Ozuna, Marte, and Lindor. Not necessarily in that order, because to me, every one of those players, would those teams would not be there without those players doing that. My issue is the word MVP, the meaning of the title, right? Meaning of what this award is. Most valuable. I don't know if... I think the Dodgers would still be there if Otani hasn't done as amazing of a season as he is. The Braves, no chance. The Mets, no chance. And the Diamondbacks, no chance. Those teams would be there. And so most valuable, best Otani. The best in the world. Best. Him and Judge. And it's Otani a step above Judge right now. Most valuable. Judge is way more valuable to the Yankees than Otani is to the Dodgers, because without Otani, they still won 100 some games last year without him. And he's not even like, so that's my problem is, if you want to call it most valuable, it's not Otani right now. There's Wow. other guys that like the Braves, Ozuna's there, not there. That team's 10 games in the tank.
David, you bring up an interesting point, and I'm glad that you said the thing about right now, specifically Otani just being a step above Judge. When we look back on this era of baseball in 10, 15 years, do you think that the whole Otani being on the Dodgers thing will affect his legacy? We know that Judge is going to be the face of whatever the Yankees do for as long as he's on the team.
Yes.
If the Dodgers win the World Series and Mookie goes off and wins World Series MVP or has six homers in the series for whatever reason, we may not remember Shohei Ohtani the way we remember an Aaron Judge or one of those. Do you think it'll affect his legacy long term?
That's an interesting point. I don't necessarily know if it'll affect his legacy. At the same time, it is going to obscure it a little bit, right? Because whatever you think of the Dodgers, you're not going to necessarily just think Ohtani. At the same time, did it obscure Derek Jeter's legacy, right? I know he was the captain. He was a little bit different. But, you know, yeah, Jeter and all those teams. I mean, you don't talk about Posada in any other way, or Mariano or Pettit and any of those guys. They were part of a team. Now they're a team together. Now, if they keep this team together, he's a Dodger for life. He's going to be you're going to see him nonstop for the rest of your life in a Dodger uniform. And that's going to cement it in baseball lore, is that the special player with a special franchise, kind of like being a Yankee.
We don't have enough time to talk about the Mariners. I'll hold you. We'll do a bonus segment for a couple of minutes.
We need a full show.
Yeah, I know. I'll hold you. And for those watching the television version of the show, check me out on X at the back page. We'll do a little bonus on the Mariners, because they have been. Whew. Thanks, David. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
All right, let's take it to segment four on this Wednesday edition of the show. And before we do, a reminder. Tomorrow, we've got Ian O'Connor hanging out on the program, author of Out of the Darkness. It's the Aaron Rodgers biography. I don't normally talk to authors, because authors are incredibly boring. No offense, as somebody who has written a lot of columns and things like that, I haven't written a book yet, working on it. Authors can just be tough. Interviews. Ian O'Connor is the exception. He is a longtime sports writer. He's done an amazing job in the New York sports scene. He's written countless bestsellers. He has another New York Times bestseller with this book. I'm looking forward to talking to him about it tomorrow and getting his thoughts on Aaron Rodgers after all the work he put into this book. Let's talk some NFL. Sam Yarnell. Get some thoughts on Trent Williams signing. Look, not a surprise. You knew it was going to get done ultimately. It was just a question of, you know, how close to the season. But you knew the Niners were going to have Trent Williams on the field. I knew they'd have Brandon Ayuk on the field. I said that weeks ago. And they wound up with him on the field. These things ultimately get done. The Jets situation, a little bit different with Hassan Reddick. And maybe we'll talk about that. Maybe we won't. But let's talk about Trent Williams. Looks like he'll be on the field week one for the Niners.
Yeah, incredibly surprised. So many things about this surprising to me and poorly handled on behalf of the Niners, and we'll get to that in a second. Folks, Trent Williams is the most important piece of that Niners offense. As much as we talk about Christian McCaffrey
McCaffrey.
He is the best running back. He is the best running back in the league, no question about it. Brandon Ayuk is very good. He's, what, a top 20 receiver in the league. Debo Samuel's a top 15 receiver in the league. Probably. And Brock Purdy's, yeah, whatever. Trent Williams is the best left tackle in football. And left tackle is the most important. I say this as a former offensive lineman, offensive line position. And I think for a right-handed quarterback, everyone would agree with me unanimously. Trent Williams has been the best at it since his days in Washington. And quite frankly, I know there are people out there saying that, you know, his dealings with franchises now in two separate situations haven't been the best. Well, I'll challenge you with this by saying Trent Williams just understands his value to a very, very potent 49ers offense. On the 49ers side, there, as I understand it, as it's been reported on by now multiple people out of the San Francisco market, is massive uproar within the organization about how this was handled. And to me, it seems like Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch are very much on the hot seat at this point, as weird as that is to say. I mean, as much as Kyle Shanahan has done with nothing, I mean, he's got, again, I cannot stress this enough, Brock Purdy is his quarterback, and he took him to a Super Bowl. But now all of a sudden, Jason, it seems like ownership isn't happy with the decision making of Lynch and Shanahan to go out and give all this guaranteed money to Trent Williams over the next couple of seasons and all this guaranteed money to Debo Samuel. I can't quite understand that. For me, it's more like, oh my gosh, you did all this with Brock Purdy. Let me give you more money. Go find a real quarterback and let's actually go win this thing. At the end of the day, I'm curious what your takeaway was when I first mentioned to you that I was hearing that there was some unrest in San Francisco.
I don't understand it. I can't understand how an organization could be upset with Kyle. And now look, you could talk about Kyle Shanahan's ability to win the big one, right? I mean, going back to his time as an offense. Look, you can. I mean, it is certainly a fair conversation to have.
Sure.
But the fact of the matter is there are 29 other teams in this league, 30 other teams. There are a lot of teams in this league that would kill to be in the position the 49ers have been in over the last several years. Your critiques of Brock Purdy notwithstanding, I agree. Why Jed York and this organization would be up in arms with the way Lynch and look, I didn't think Lynch handled the Ayuk situation the greatest. I thought both sides there was some blame, but ultimately they got it done. They got him in camp. He'll be on the field. Let me ask you something though, because you love to pick on. And if we get to Travis Kelce, we get to it because it's not as big a deal as what I want to ask you about. What does Brock Purdy need to do this year to make you think he is as good as a lot of other people think he is, but that you still remain a holdout on? What do you need to see from him this year? And don't say win a Super Bowl, because there's a lot of great quarterbacks that don't win a Super Bowl.
That's not fair.
What do you need to see?
Because, and I'll tell you why that's not fair to say that he needs to win a Super Bowl, because I think Josh Allen is the second best quarterback in the league, and Josh Allen hasn't won a Super Bowl yet. I think from Brock Purdy this year, I just need to see more domination, really, at the end of the day. And as eye test as that sounds, whenever Brock Purdy is deep in one of these games and has a chance to put these teams to sleep, I'm talking about good teams, right? We know that, I forget what team it was last year, they beat 49-14. But against these powerhouse teams, your Eagles, your Cowboys, not unless you're playing the Cowboys away from home, in which case they're just not a good football team. I need to see him step on the throat of a team. It seems like so often he's reliant upon other parts of his team, and that's not bad, right? Like, at the end of the day, I'm not saying that Brock Purdy's not a guy who can win. He's shown you that, but he's not the most talented guy in the league. His decision-making is not in the same place as a Joe Burrow or these other guys who we consider top five or top 10 quarterbacks. I need to see domination from Brock Purdy. He's got to be a top three quarterback in the league.
All right, we'll hang out. We'll hang on the Kelce stuff with him just basically saying he's not willing to concede at this point in his career and at his age, you know, what his role on the team is and all of that stuff. We'll hold on to that for another time. All right, I want to talk tennis, U.S. Open, all men's semifinal. We'll talk about it next. Odds and Ends wraps it all up in about 10 minutes. Literally some odds to talk about. How about to the tune of $35 billion? We'll get to it. But first, something to consider, Sam Yarnell. Consider this. We will have an all-men's U.S. Try that again. We will have an all-U.S. men's semifinal at the U.S. Open. After Francis Tiafoe took care of Grigor Dimitrov last night, Dimitrov having to retire in the fourth set, hurt himself late in the third set, retired in the fourth set, just simply could not move anymore. The 33-year-old who's had a great resurgence back in the top 10. But Francis Tiafoe, to me, is the story of this tournament. After you lose Djokovic, you had no Nadal to begin with. After you lose Alcaraz, to me, Tiafoe is the story of this tournament. Can an American win the U.S. Open for the first time since Andy Roddick years ago? That remains to be seen. Jannik Sinner will have obviously a lot to say about that. Tiafoe will get Fritz on Thursday. Taylor Fritz handling Sasha Zverev in their quarterfinal match yesterday, a thrilling match with a couple of tiebreakers, some great tennis being played out at the U.S. Open. But wouldn't it be something if finally U.S. men's tennis could break this drought, that somebody could break through and win a slam? And look, this might be the best opportunity they get, because you're not going to have many tournaments where you lose Alcaraz and Djokovic, at least for the next couple of years. You're not going to have many tournaments where you lose those guys early enough and the path sort of clears to get into this sort of position. The only shame is that we have to have Tiafoe and Fritz square off in a semifinal and not a final instead, so we could be guaranteed of a U.S. Open USA winner. But it'll be fun to watch. It's going to be an electric atmosphere on Thursday when those two meet up.
It will, Jason, and I think it's going to come down to the winner of Wednesday's match between Medvedev and Sinner, right? I don't think, you know, great story, Jack Draper, Alex de Minaur back in another quarterfinal. I don't think either of them have a chance in the semifinal against either of the quarterfinalists on the other side. So, yeah, can the Americans come through and beat a top five player in the world? It would be huge for American tennis. It simply would. It would be huge if Francis Tiafoe wins, for the DMV and tennis around the DC area, his hometown, and I believe where he still resides and practices to this day. This is quite the story in the U.S. Open, right? And not to mention, I know I write him off so quickly, but the Jack Draper story after, was it Tiafoe who that whole falling out happened against at Cincinnati? Who was that against, Jason? You'll remember.
It wasn't Tiafoe. It was the Canadian. Alassim.
Auger-Aliassime. Yes. It was Felix Auger-Aliassime. Yes. You're exactly right. Yeah. Regardless.
But I will say this. And Patrick McEnroe said this on the show the other day. He thinks Jack Draper could win a major. It may not be this one. But he thinks Jack Draper is good enough to win a major.
The Cinderella story of Jack Draper that has come to be this season has been amazing. And as one of the young guys in tennis, it's great to see him on the brink of a major semifinal. Like, that is, it's awesome to see. Again, I don't know realistically what his chances are going to be against Sinner or Medvedev, two guys playing incredibly strong tennis right now. We're in for a fun final weekend here at the U.S. Open. Yeah. It's going to be a fun couple of days in New York.
Yeah, it is. I have to kind of fall on my own sword here. I don't have to admit that this conversation occurred. I don't have to. Nobody would know, and nobody would be worse for wear if I didn't admit this happened. But after watching Aryna Sabalenka dismantle Kwai Zhang on Tuesday, I texted our friend Patrick McEnroe. He and I text throughout the day during these Grand Slam events. He literally is texting me during matches, which I probably shouldn't tell people, but we're texting during matches sometimes. And yesterday I texted him after Sabalenka wins, and I go, could she beat a top 100 men's player? You know, she has the power. Like, if you look at her serving speed, her forehand speed, I think I saw it mentioned, her forehand speed is harder than Carlos Alcaraz. Like, she hits the ball that kind of hard. She has that kind of power. And he said I had exposed myself. He basically mocked me. Basically, you know, said he didn't think that, well, I won't say what he said because he may not want it repeated. So I won't say what his reply was, but he basically said, no, she could not beat a top 100 ranked, men's player, but she is damn good. I mean, if she does not win this thing on the women's side, then somebody's going to have to, like, I just can't see it. I know Swiatek is the number one player in the world. But when Aryna Sabalenka is playing her very best tennis, I don't think there's anybody that could beat her. I love the story, and you know, the Navarro story is going to be fun to watch. You know, she gets Sabalenka in the next round. I'd be shocked if Navarro even got a set against Sabalenka on Thursday.
Huh. Well, you know, that's interesting because Emma's been playing very good tennis, right? Especially in the match against Paula Badosa, mm-hmm. who also was playing good tennis coming in. Just an interesting note before we go. Jason told me this story. It made me look something up when he told me at the other night. The fastest recorded serve in ATP history. You know what it was?
What?
I'll give you a hint. It was John Isner. You know what the number was?
What was it?
2,931 miles per hour. The radar detector was broke, but that's the fastest serve of all time.
Odds and Ends wraps it up next. Okay, just about time to put the wraps on this baby for a Wednesday. Don't forget, on Thursday, Ian O'Connor will hang out with us. Author of Out of the Darkness, the Aaron Rodgers biography. I'm interested to get a look at that, chat with him. I have to admit, he sent me the book a few days ago. I have not had a chance to start reading it yet. I've gone through some of the notes. I'm the guy who used to have to do the book report and the night before would run out to, like, Walden Books. Was it called Walden Books back then? I can't remember, Sam. But I used to go out and I'd buy, like, the Cliff Notes and then write the book report based on the Cliff Notes.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, you had to buy them?
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I was the same kind of kid, but
it's the mid-90s.
Oh, man, I'm going to date myself here. But in my era, you just went on to Google Chrome and you typed in sparknotes.com and then boom, you had the summary to the book in 15 seconds.
Okay. If you miss anything from the show, make sure to go check out the podcast version. It's available on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and a whole bunch more without
it. I hope none of my old teachers subscribe.
Without any further delay, time for some odds and ends. Goodbye. both just dated ourselves a bit too. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell, $35 billion. That's how much experts say will be wagered on the National Football League this year. $35 billion. How much of that will be Sam Yarnell's money?
Yeah. Good question. It is.
How much of that will be Sam Yarnell's money? Your parents watching?
Depends on how much how well we do with Paige versus the Prince, Jason. That yeah. It really does.
We're going to have to come up with a wager for Paige versus the Prince this year. Something humiliating for the loser. It's a good idea.
If I have a better record at the end of the year, you have to do one whole show wearing Nationals paraphernalia. And if I win, or if you win at the end of the year, I'll do a whole show wearing Yankees paraphernalia.
I don't know if that's embarrassing enough.
For me, it is.
I want to destroy you. I want to make it so you can't even go see your parents again. I want to crush you.
Well, don't ruin the show.
I want to take your soul.
I mean, my gosh. Think of the just viewers, got dark. It just Jason.
It just got dark, didn't it? By the way, NFL note, before we get to the other odds and end, Patrick Surtain gets a big deal, record deal, for a defensive back. 4 years, $96 million for the Broncos corner. That was announced. $77.5 million of that is guaranteed. All right, let's talk some WNBA. The Fever are going to the playoffs. First time in, 6 years? That the Indiana Fever will be a playoff team. Just happens to coincide with the arrival of a certain player. You may have heard of her. Caitlin Clark. She's pretty good. By the way, did you see the ratings? Our friend Robert Littell from Black Sports Online posted this, so I want to give him credit. Ion Television. We might appear on Ion Television on some affiliates, by the way, so I'm not taking shots here. Ion Television, for their last Caitlin Clark, it was Caitlin Clark against Angel Reese, I believe, had 1.3 million viewers, which was a WNBA Ion TV record. And I said, is it just an Ion TV record? Like, has more than 1.3 million people ever tuned into Ion Television for anything? Maybe other than this show. Has anybody ever tuned into Ion Television to the tune of 1.3 million? Maybe Walker Texas Ranger reruns? I don't know. Chuck Norris, man. Chuck Norris can do anything.
Yeah, that can't be a WNBA record. There's
No, it's Ion Television.
Yeah, but that doesn't surprise me at all. Because, you know, I mean, Ion TV, again, love our Ion TV affiliates where they broadcast the Sports Wrap. Shout out to you, wherever you may be, Wyalusing, Pennsylvania. This one's for you. Ion TV to me is the TV station that's on all the TVs when you go in the Wendy's and you sit down to eat on a road trip. They've got like all the different TVs playing.
Is that
station.
When goes the heart?
That's Ion TV to me. WNBA, can we not get some Prime Video involved? Like, can we not get some TNT? Like,
they have Prime Video.
We got these awesome games. Let's move. Let's put them on NBC and the big three-letter networks and stuff.
They have some games on Prime, I think.
On CBS too, definitely. Yeah, but let's get a roll there, especially when it's Angel versus Caitlin.
I mean, imagine if in his rookie year, Victor Wembanyama had taken the Spurs to the postseason. Like, this is that kind of thing. You know, we talk about most valuable player of the league. Fine, from a playing perspective, it's Asia Wilson. But if you talk about the most valuable player in the league, it's Caitlin Clark. Most valuable player to the league, it's Caitlin Clark. And it's not even close, Sam.
And at the end of the day, Jason, this all just goes back to one thing. Being bad wins championships.
It's going to wrap it up for us. Thanks to David Ardsma. Thanks to you, Sam Yarnell. We'll see you all back here on Thursday. Ian O'Connor joins the show. We'll see you then.